All right, guys, good to have you back. I'm sitting here with my good friend Gary Hale, and we started with about, 30 seconds of conversation. We just decided to hit the record button. So what have you been up to, Gary, besides herding chickens in your office?
Did you see the post?
I just saw it. Yep.
Yeah, we had a rooster come in today. I guess a couple of people in our ministry they are trying to rescue this thing. It looks like it has it's got some sort of wound or something on the back of the head or whatever. And so they said they're trying to nurse it back, I guess.
Wow.
So I don't know. The thing walked in my office today, but as I put on my post, I wonder if he knew I had chicken tenders last night. Because I really did.
I don't think he's got too much to worry about. He's a pretty small guy.
Yeah, he is. He need to.
By the time you get him defeathered, I don't think there's much to eat there, maybe.
Yeah, not a whole lot. He's kind of pretty, though.
Yeah.
So, he just kind of walked in, just kind of took a...
Checking you out and...
Checking things out, and then he just walked away.
So now we have a women's rescue ministry, and we have a chicken rescue ministry.
But that does remind me of something, though. if we can get it firing on a topic here. We've had over the years, we've had people that have come down. It's rare, but it's happened multiple times, I would say, when they've come down to learn about the women's rescue ministry, like what they do to, reach women on the street and, get them off the street and, equip them and, all this kind of stuff and disciple them and get them back to where they are, functional in society.
Right.
In a dignified way. And we have had multiple times where somebody would be like, well, what about the dogs that we see on the street? I mean, and it's hard for my wife to keep a straight face because, blood, sweat, tears into this ministry.
Right.
You're rescuing women. You have a lot of women that
who've been traumatized since 12 years old.
You pour into them. You see the success stories, but you also, your heart breaks at the ones that don't turn out the way, you're hoping for them and whatever happens. And so then to have somebody listen to the whole thing, meet the women, ask questions, and then the lingering thought in their mind is, what are you doing about all the dogs on the street?
Yeah. Same thing we're doing with the chickens.
Right. We're not eating the dogs. I'll tell you that. But, so it's just interesting how some people just kind of miss the big picture or what the main idea is,
Well, and this is a good segue into the conversation because I think that's why I like our what do we call it? Not apprenticeship. Is it pretty? You call it apprenticeship? What do we call in that program we have?
The internship.
Yeah.
Or in the summer.
Yeah. That's why I like the internship program. Not against at all. Like short-term mission trips. I think they're good for casting a vision. You and I were just having a conversation a couple of minutes ago, how it's so easy. Guess what, Americans? We have culture. We have a culture. And we see things through a certain set of eyes, and we don't realize that in the other parts of the world that things are different, and they just run differently. And so I've seen that a lot this week in several things, and it's really called my attention to it because it's when you come for 3 months or 2 months, you function in a society. You don't come down for, just a week. And again, I'm not against the short term.
It's a good introduction.
But a lot of times, for instance, and I've shared this with you, I'll be super transparent, but there's a book on Amazon called When Helping Hurts. And I learned that firsthand in Venezuela. I loved this family. They went through some serious trauma. I remember their son, pressure cooker pot blew up all over their son. I was the one that drove over there and picked him up, took him to the hospital. I mean, it peeled the skin off his face, off his chest. He was rough for a while. They lived in a little tin house, and we actually tried to find them a house. We bought them a car, and all of it was in good heart, good desire to help them out. But what we didn't realize was, and I'm not talking bad about him, but the simplicity of their mindset and that, for instance, in Venezuela, the issue is not the racism in Venezuela is not black and white. The racism in Venezuela is upper class, lower class. And we elevated his class without even realizing. We were just trying to help the guy out. We elevated his class, and he actually ended up turning on us. Yeah. And so I think this is a good discussion missions-wise where it's a good if you really want to look into a mission field that I recommend going somewhere and spending some time there to kind of ask those questions because, not that it's wrong to care about the dogs in the street, but you'll see. I'll give you a perfect example here and in Venezuela. I remember the first time I saw a whole family on a motorcycle, and the only one wearing a helmet was the dad or the driver. And I was so mad. I was like, how in the world? That is just so arrogant. How can this dude drive around with this little baby, you know, on his wife's arms between, you know, she's holding it in front of her. I mean, this little time where you see little tiny 2 and 3 year old kids sitting up on the tank of the motorcycle, holding onto the handlebars all the time. And then the first time I saw that, I was like, that is just ridiculous. Cause I'm judging by my own culture, by US culture, you know, you pull up to a stoplight, all your motorcycles pretty much stay in a line and they wait for the light to change and they go. Well, here, people don't have the money to go out and buy a vehicle, but they do need to get around. They do have to get to work. They have to get to the grocery store. And so those who do and can afford a vehicle, you know, you can get a motorcycle here for around $1,000, $1,500, maybe a little bit less, depending on the kind of bike. So that's all they can afford, but changes the game a whole lot. It's easy to look at my gringo eyes and say, what? How irresponsible? How, you know? But then you realize, well, look where they live. They have nothing. They've sacrificed to get that motorcycle to have some form of transportation. That's the only way they can get around. That's, you know, and it, that changed my mind. It changed my mind here. I mean, I came into it knowing that from Venezuela, but I'm saying it's really easy to evaluate things through American eyes, and you don't even realize you're doing that, evaluating things through American eyes. I think missions has changed my mindset on a lot of things. Not that I'm not a compromiser by any stretch of the whatever, but, you know, I just mentioned to you before we began that, you know, even in our church culture in the States, is very separational, you know, sometimes it's hardly any contact with people in the world. We come to church, we have this protected little environment where the vocabulary is protected. Nobody's going to do stuff they shouldn't do. And when they do, it's a big deal, you know, and but we don't get out and rub shoulders with people, because when you rub shoulders with people in the world, sometimes there's uncomfortable circumstances that come up, and you have to make a decision in the moment how to handle those gray area decisions. I think, you know, one of my mentioned was just about a good friend in Venezuela. You know, I went to his house. His uncle was drunk. So his uncle comes over and he's cracking jokes while he's drunk. I'm gonna be honest, he was funny. But I'm sitting on the couch and I have this decision going through my mind. Do I laugh or do I not laugh? If I laugh, am I promoting his drunkenness? Am I encouraging him to do something he shouldn't do? But then if I just sit here stoic and stone cold, do I lose an opportunity to minister to a family because his drunkenness is not an offense to me? His drunkenness is an offense to God. So why do I need to act offended? And I know, listen, you line up 10 people and probably 5 would say, I'd get out of there. And probably the other 5 would say, well, I'm going to try to maybe keep that door open. Or maybe it would be skewed a little bit different. I don't know. I had so many moments like that.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, part of doing missions, as you say, or implied, is learning about the culture. And that requires us to have a disposition of the heart and the mind to be a learner.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you come to a field and you learn all about it, but you're really still learning. I mean, I still process things. I mean, we've lived
when
here.
When a chicken walks into your
room. Yeah, I mean, that's the first time ever. But, you know, so, you know, to kind of tie it back in with a, you know, 1 week trip, it's not downing that. It's a good introduction. It gets
sure.
You, I mean, I came on a 1 week trip, and then I came on another 1 week. I came on a lot of 1 week trips, but each time I'm trying to learn, you know, mm-hmm. what I'm saying? I'm trying to learn about everything, about the culture, about myself, you know, about the Lord. And so it's stretching, it's putting you in new, and so you tend, and that's why, you know, a lot of times there's conflict when somebody is presented with something new, because something new sometimes can be different and can mean change, you know, change for you. You're not used to this. And so you have to kind of process that and back it out. And then you have to, you know, process it through the filter of Scripture. Is this really a non-negotiable here? Or is this just what I'm comfortable with? Is this the preference? Is this the background that I'm used to? And so there are a lot of things. I think it does, you know, I think, you know, I've seen some people. I'm thinking of one in particular that, you know, really, really hardcore, very conservative. But over time, He was still conservative, but he learned that he needed to have fellowship with a little bit outside of his box, I can say. And so, I was happy to see that because it helped the guy survive a long time here. If you're just, you're angry at the world, you're angry at everything. Everything's not, if it's not right down your line of path, I think we have to be able to have a little bit of grace and space, be secure in who we are,
yeah.
But also be a learner and also realize, I'm not God has not designated me to be the judge of all things. And so, maybe we're going to look at things a little bit differently here and there, between me and a friend, but I need that friendship. You know what I'm saying? And so I think it mellows you out on the mission field. I guess I have seen some people that have never mellowed out, and they're militant, and they come across angry, and they're like against everything.
And they generally don't last very long.
But they generally don't last. Now, those that do
are really stubborn.
Oh man, they're a terror though. Because they damage a lot of people.
Right.
But I think you're right. Typically, those type of people that are just you have to think and process all things like they do. You're right. They typically don't last because they're trying to change. They're trying to change function of culture.
Well,
and you can't do that.
I mean, let's be honest, Gary. We've talked about it on another podcast, so I'll be super honest about it. I would love to change the way driving is done here, but I look at people's faces as they come within inches of my mirror, and they're not even shaking even in the least bit. If that happened in the States, people would be freaking out, honking their horns. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
And so it's like. That has helped me realize that this doesn't faze them. This does not faze them. This is just the way it works. And so the quicker I can adjust to the way it works, because I can come in and honking horns and jumping out of my car and chewing people out. And what their take on that situation is be like, man, what's up with that gringo? They're not going to be like, no, we need to fix this. I'm going to blow an opportunity in the future because it's just not even in. It's not even in their radar. It's just this is the way it's been. This is the way it doesn't get. There's no clamping down on it. The funny things here is when you see like the transit police that are out there on the side of the road within probably 300 feet up the road, you can see all the motorcycles and pasolas doing a U-turn, because they're going around the block to get away from them. So they don't, it's just, there's no enforcement. What are they going to do? Run after you? The only way they get it is if you wave at you and you actually listen to them. And so in fact, my wife got a ticket and the kids at school are like, miss, why did you stop? You just keep going.
Yeah.
that's a perfect example of you can either embrace it or you can, my neighbors are drunks. My neighbor comes out at 9 o'clock in the morning with a bottle of whiskey. He sits on a plastic chair in the shade until it gets too hot. And then he goes inside. I've chatted with him a little bit before. He doesn't sleep real well, I guess too. But it smells like he's doing a little wacky tobacco too, in the evenings, the smell that comes over to our house. But anyway, we've had an opportunity to minister to our neighbors before, and she asked us, my son and I, to come over and help her with a curtain rod, Well, I could say, no, I'm not doing that. You guys are a bunch of drunks. I don't associate with drunks. Or we can just look for opportunities as a minister. We don't have to go over there and endorse that lifestyle or not talk to him because he's drunk. No, I'm kind to him, and I hope that opens up an opportunity by maintaining that. And I guess when you can hear stuff like this from the American side of culture, you could look at it and say, man, these guys are a little bit wish-washy on stuff. They're not solid. Yeah. And for me, it's like, no, I actually see how in my American culture, we lived in a bubble where it was so easy to isolate ourselves. And we never really did rub shoulders with real people unless you work a secular job. And even then you have an escape several times a week where you run out and you get with the people that talk right and act right. And I'm not downing that. But you like for us, when we come to church, it's not just to hear and get charged up. We're ministering too. So it's an active part of what we're doing. I guess it's not a place we can come and hide. It's actually a place we're coming to pour out and invest in people. And so it just has made me, it's also challenged me to really look at things scripturally and really know where I sit on certain things, because it was easy in the past to give pat answers and say, well, this is wrong because, and then when I really sat down and evaluated it, for instance, I tell people often the New Testament, there's a lot of principles in the New Testament, but the New Testament is more about relationship than rules. When you look at the Old Testament, you knew what you could eat on what day and where you could go and how far you could go and what animals you could eat and blah, blah, blah. And in the New Testament, there's a lot more of a relational aspect of your conscience being in play. I mean, there's absolutes, certainly. But a lot of times we find, too, that people take the conscience issues and try to turn them into absolutes. And I think in so many ways it's damaging because it takes us away from actually seeking God in that moment and asking God what he would have us to do than just trying to put out this flat thing and say, well, this is wrong. It's wrong for you. It's wrong for me. If my conscience bothers me, then you can't do it either. Well, hang on a second. Because I'm super clear on, if your conscience bothers you, you better not. Whatever is not of faith is sin. But it's funny how in a church you can have varying positions on music and convictions on that issue. Yeah. How's that work? Yeah. Are half the people messed up and the other half not? And then where on that scale of, let's just say 1 to 10, and you got both extremes in your church, you know, is 1 just super good and then 10 is just horribly bad? Or how do we qualify all the other people in the middle there that are not quite, you see what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think that's why I think that's, you know, going back to the short-term trip, it's an opportunity. I mean, for me, it always, you know, it bothers me when people can be so off base as far as what they're brokenhearted about. And not that we abuse dogs. I mean, you know how much we love our boxer dogs. We have 2 boxer dogs. I mean, they're like...
You're preaching to the choir now, Gary.
Right. I mean, those things are on our couch, on our bed. I mean, we love those things. We sit and talk to them and pet them and play with them. And so, you know, we actually consider days out. We don't do it very much, but like when... You know, do we want to take the dogs to the beach? You know, do we want to, and we do take them out to the property, let them run a little bit, you know, and so look.
I can't do that. My dog would eat somebody. You
know, we love our dogs. We don't mistreat them. We don't like to see people mistreat animals. So with all that being prefaced, but when you come down and you hear about people being rescued and not from a, like, the Great White Hope or anything like that. Not like, oh, we are doing, but as far as people having their lives transformed and then your heart is breaking over the stray dogs. It's something just says, you know, where's your priority? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I want to play the devil's advocate here because I don't think we truly, when you live it and you see it like we do on a constant basis, it's easy to identify with a little bit more. And the reason I say that is, for instance, in Chattanooga, as far as I know right now, maybe this has changed, but I know you can get at least 4 to 5 hot meals a day. And if you're homeless or whatever, I'm not talking about the rescue ministry and prostitution and all that kind of stuff. I'm just saying, if you're a drug addict and you just are sleeping on the street, you can go get up to 5 meals a day. And so I think sometimes people evaluate those things and they see it kind of like the same way. Like, oh, that's really nice that they're doing that for those girls. That's really nice. They don't really think about the trauma. Yeah. And they really don't understand it. I'll never forget coming down here on our survey trip and Allison sitting down and kind of explaining to us. And one of the things I never crossed my mind was the fact that, like, stunted emotional development when somebody is violated at a young age. If somebody's molested at a young age, 12 years old, that sometimes you have a 30-year-old woman with the mind of a 12-year-old because emotionally she stopped developing. And that shocked me. I'd never heard that before.
Mm.
Yeah. I've been to college, I've studied, you know, a bunch of different, but I had never heard that before. And that really, and then Allison told us of another woman who was so used to chaos in her life when she came and they had nice music in the background for her to make jewelry to, it drove her nuts. And so she would just start fights with arguments with women in the workshop because she was trying to create an environment more comfortable for her because she was used to chaos. She couldn't function in a tranquil environment. Those things were shocking to me.
Yeah, and I think that you know that's part of learning too. And I think it's that's where you can learn from the field. It goes both ways. I mean, the interdependence, because you learn from one another. But that's where you bring somebody in. In your case, we're not bringing you in to teach you about women's rescue ministry. But in your interaction, you learn some things just by
somebody been there.
But that works both ways. Always it should. And I think that goes to what's Steve Saint, the son of Nate Saint that was killed in Ecuador years ago. You know, he's really big on interdependence. And so he's really big on the, you know, it's not just a one-way benefit. on these like mission trips. You know what I'm saying? That it actually needs it's not independence. It's interdependence. They need to be structured in a way that it's helping both sides. And I really think that's good. You know, because I think there's another side of this too. And it, you know, it's shocking. And so you also have to teach, you have to teach your people here at the local level that not all every American that comes in is necessarily a super spiritual person. And I think that many times the default is to say, oh, wow, these people are they're coming here in our country. And so they're like, really, they've got it really together and they're super spiritual.
Right.
And then you realize that really, in between me and you, I mean, many times the people that come, really the only reason why they're coming is they have resources that our people don't have. And there's been many times when I've thought, you know what, we've got 20, 25 people that are more prepared than the people that are coming here.
Yeah.
The only difference is they have money.
Right.
And we don't.
Right.
Because we should be doing this somewhere else. Now, I don't mean that to be ugly, because look, I came on a short term trip when I wanted to serve the Lord. I was, you know, living for the Lord in the States, but I didn't know anything about missions or anything. I had so much, you know, so much to learn. But the Lord used that to put me on sort of this path. And so that's why I believe in short-term trips, is because I know that they can take another Gary Hale and put him on that path.
Yeah.
And he doesn't learn everything. But I'm just saying that one of the things that you also have to teach our people is that, you know, they're brothers and sisters in the faith. Okay. So let's, you know, what we can learn from them, that's fine. But let's also to pour into them as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Not just assume that they're the experts because they're Americans.
No, I think I think you brought up a great point. It's something that Sarah and I have made a little bit of a ministry shift recently over, that because I think it's so easy what you just said. The perception to be that every American that steps onto the playing field here, we just come the most prepared and ready to go. And I really felt like there was a damage being done to a certain extent. I want to be careful. I'm not calling anybody else out, but at least us. We just felt like we were in the youth ministry, and we felt like we were just super gringo saturated. And we kept having announcements in church. We need Dominicans. We need Dominicans. We need Dominicans. And nobody was really stepping up to the plate. And I told Sarah, I said, you know, I just feel like we got our hands on lots of things. I would like to do, like the seminary ministry with more excellence. And I said, I don't have the connection you have with the teens. And I really think there needs to be a sense of urgency there where somebody would step in. Because at the end of the day, I think you and I have talked about this before, but, you know, in form and function are two different things. In the form, you know, I'm the same as everybody else here. I work alongside Dominicans and I minister with them, and form, we're the same, you know, even actually I'm under, you know, Carlos Rijo, I guess in a ministry context would be over me. But, in my function for being here is to raise up Dominicans, to disciple them so that they can reach their own people. It's not for me to be the end all, you know, and come down here and just fill all the spots and just hang out until I die, you know, but it's just to come down here and train them up so that they can continue that process, because eventually, hopefully, work myself out of a job and then we move on, and maybe not from this ministry, but I'm just saying, you know, from like vision of a huge long-term vision of SEMCA would be if somebody going through all four levels of SEMCA, and then they decide to plant a church, and I can walk alongside with them and help them plant that church. And then they are going to create more church planters if they catch the vision.
So, and that's where, you know, long-term, the educational component is something that you could do, and help and see the gospel, you know, go into different areas. Like you just said, you know, that's something that you could spend a whole life doing.
Oh yeah.
You know, and because, you know, again, I think if you take, you know, that's a paradigm that was a shift for me, because, you know, it was so drilled into you early on about the whole, and we've talked about this, and, you know, some of it's semantics, some of it's just different ways of looking at it, but, you know, national, 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 national. And I distinctly remember, thinking of, really reflecting upon the Cuban family that had started coming to our church. They were a Cuban family that had gone to the United States. They had gotten a scholarship because the medical school here in San Pedro took U.S. loans. So okay. I didn't even know that, I didn't even know they did that. I didn't know that was possible. And so that's why the medical school here has, in the past, and then they got in trouble because they were, it was a big thing.
The way things that don't get supervised normally turn
they
out.
Were like, they were either giving the exams away or they were rigging the thing to give them better reporting. And so then they got in trouble with the U.S. government. The U.S. government said, look, you know, we've warned you before, so we're not going to give loans to student American students to go there. Well, anyway, I think that that's starting to change again. I think I heard that they're going to be able to get loans. And so it's easier, it's cheaper to go to a Dominican medical school than it is in the United States. And so that's one of the ways traditionally this medical school here, the USA, part of the USA's
Universidad algo de algo.
Yeah. This is part of the way that people come down here, you know, for that. So we had a Cuban family. They had made it to the United States. They were legal with the United States and all that to the point that they could get the loans for the school. So they came here to the Dominican Republic. And I remember thinking, so this rhetoric about being a strong Dominican church, and I saw them as Cuban Americans, not Dominicans.
Right, yeah.
And so I started looking at it from their eyes. And how that would alienate me. I mean, if I'm an American,
sure, yeah,
and I go to Germany and I fit into the German church, and all I hear is this guy talking about, you know, German church, German church, German church, German church. Well, dude, I just want to worship the Lord and be part of a body. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, how would I feel about a German church talking about, we just want a German church? I would much feel. And so it was a paradigm swing for me. And then I started looking into the history as well as San Pedro, and I realized San Pedro is not just all Dominican. San Pedro is built on all the islands, and those islands are all not the same, and they don't have the same colonial backers. I mean, some are English, some are French, some are, you know, from the different. And so then you really, and the Colocos, the guys that came from the islands to cut the sugar cane, and there are still people here that are descendants of that. And so I realized, well, San Pedro is really a melting pot, and it just changed my whole paradigm. And so, yeah. And then I'll contradict myself. At the same time, I realized that the majority of our people are Dominicans, and so yes, they need to be involved, and it's important to make sure that Dominicans have leadership and all that. But the paradigm shift was kind of broadening it out a little bit, more of an Acts 13 paradigm, which all those people were not from the same. All those leaders in that church were not from the same area. If you look at that, if you take the map of where they say all those people were from, those people were from very diverse regions.
Right.
And so they're right. And so it became more about, let's just be a church. And so getting back to like what you're saying, so is the best value of you, not as an American. That's where I'm a little bit different probably than some. I don't look at it, where's the best value of Jason's American. I look at it, where's the best value as you as a part of the body of the Christ. And you're here as an American.
Right.
That's secondary. To me, it's your gifting.
I don't know that I would disagree with you. I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate. The only hindrance that I see to that is and what we felt like in the youth was the issue is there was a lack of a sense of urgency, because yeah, even though we may not think of the distinction between American and Dominican, it actually goes both ways. And so they would look at us just like you said, not every American comes down as the most spiritual or most, I'm thinking of Spanish, but capacitado, they're not the most capacitated to do the job. And so, but they would just look at it like, well, these guys came all the way from there to come here to minister. And so I think there has to be some sense of urgency of the necessity for them to be involved on some level. And I think if we just come in and look at it only as a church and we just fill the positions because the position needs to be filled, but we're never thinking long term, like, because the ultimate goal, whether it's Americans or Dominicans, whether you stay here or whether you go somewhere else, is to make disciples who make disciples. And that's it. So it doesn't matter your nationality, but I think there is some cement.
I would say we're on the same page. And here's why. Because I don't think that your greatest value is in the youth group. When you look at it and have the whole auditorium there, and you're like, there's 40 people that can do what Jason and Sarah are doing in the youth group.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's not an American thing. It's a gifting thing. So what can you do that other people? Well, we don't have anybody that's gifted in this way as far as the seminary, you know, to head it up, that can give the time to it, to organize it, to do all that. So I kind of look at it, and at the same time, I do see what you're saying, because we do look at that. We do look at it as, you need local buy-in.
And I'll take it one more step. We felt like, even though it was in a passive manner, we're just trying to help. We're just trying to minister to people. But we felt like if we were stepping into shoes that somebody else should be stepping into, we were not doing it purposely in an active way, but we were actually complicit in their laziness, or complicit in their, that sounds awful. I'm not trying to judge somebody.
I wouldn't say laziness, probably their reservedness. Is that a word?
Well, it depends.
Hesitancy.
Depends. I mean, I've got some university students that feel like the God's, I've got some that are
university students.
I got some that are digging in because God's moved in their life and they're ministering, but I got others who I think God has talked to, and they don't necessarily want to make that commitment. So whatever you want to call it, you could call it, for some it may be lazy, for some it may be hesitance, but literally our presence in filling that hole, potentially in my mind hindered. And so I didn't want to be that potential hinder, because this sounds awful and I don't mean it in a bad way. I'm really kind of here to make people uncomfortable a little bit. I'm here to make them, the conversation you and I had via WhatsApp the other day about, is there a difference between a disciple and a believer?
Yeah.
I just had that conversation in my two SEMCA classes this week. Why? And I even told them, I said, I'm not going to answer this for you. I'm not going to answer this. I just want you to think of the whole of Scripture. I want you to think of the whole of the New Testament as you've read it, heard different things, and you, in your mind, put together what it means to you. Is it just okay to accept Jesus and that's it? Or what is discipleship then? What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus?
Yeah, that's a good, in fact, we should jump off of here and just go into that for the next podcast.
All right, we'll keep that thought. But
so we've talked about roosters, stray dogs, mission trips.
Yes. What's our one thought? For me, my one thought out of this one, and it's not necessarily directed just at short-term mission trips, because I don't want to be that kind of precise. I would just say be careful in so many things. Learn your playing field. Take some time. Don't form quick opinions and mindsets, because the longer you invest or you are somewhere, I would say ask lots of questions. Want to hear something cool? I've got a friend who's ministering in Prince Edward Island in Canada. He's a Canadian, old college buddy. He came to Santo Domingo this week. I was going to try to get to see him. I couldn't, so we FaceTimed on Wednesday. We had a conversation about culture. And guess what? He's Canadian. But he told me, and the culture there, it takes a long time to get to know people, and you have to do this and you have to do that. And it's like he recognized there were certain elements of his culture that he was just going to have to work. And so, I would say whatever you're doing, ministry in the States, I ministered in Utah at Baptist camp in Utah. Wow. Shocked. We had kids come from polygamous families to a youth camp. How you deal with that? Well, that's like a hush-hush thing over on this side of the U.S., but over there, it's all in all their papers and everything else. They're not hiding it. How do you minister to a family like that? You know what I'm saying? So I would just, my one takeaway from this is, in everything ministry-wise, try to be a learner, try to listen, and don't take a one-week vision trip and form lifelong opinions about the way things go. Ask lots of questions. And then I would encourage, if you can do like our internship program and you can spend some more time here. I mean, we've designed this thing specifically so you can get dug in the culture, and you kind of, when you go to the grocery store and things go a certain way, and you go to the ferreteria and things are a certain way, and you have to make things just move around town, you start to see some common denominators of how things function, and it helps you adjust your mind, not always think you're going to have to adjust them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think the end goal there is, again, to make disciples who make disciples. And so even to tie in the back half of our conversation, I mean, your involvement in that, if it's from a distance or it's up close and living on the field, it's for the gospel to continue, for the gospel to go beyond whatever church and whatever work that you're in, that you're used as an instrument and a catalyst for that to continue. And sometimes that means that we have to stretch ourselves. We have to expand out from ourselves. And, we can't feel like we have to do everything. We have to empower other people.
Yeah.
Join us.
And don't be quick to judge somebody else or come to radical conclusions. I mean, the one thing you mentioned, you know, like when the girls, when Allison goes out to minister to the women, you guys go to a pollo place, you go to a chicken place and buy chicken and give them to them as they come in. And there may be some people that say, well, I'd never be caught dead around those women. Somebody saw me, you know, guess what? I would. Now, I mean, probably not in a street corner, but in a chicken place where it's all, you know what I'm saying? Don't form quick decisions. Learn what's going on. Learn what's behind the scenes. And don't be quick to just to categorize things and throw them out like that, because those women need somebody to minister to them. Those women need somebody to pour into them. And just like you said on a separate podcast, that just going out with Allison and all the workers that you just out here playing cornhole out here in the back opened up so many opportunities for communication. And yet somebody could so easily say, well, I just never would have anything to do with that. You know, that's a women's ministry and that's it. Well, guess what? Those women come talk to their pastor on Sunday. Yeah. And when their pastor can identify with them on a normal level and sit down and eat a piece of chicken with them, you have broken down so many barriers. And so there's so many things like that, that, you know.
Yeah. And this isn't, I mean, we weren't going on this track, but just to say, you know, we had like 8 women on Sunday. That was from the ministry that they all sit there together. And I think the week before that they had 7. So it's, you know, again, things, and I've talked about this on the other podcast as you referenced, you know, even though I was down here, I had certain prejudices or biases, you know, that prevented me from opening myself up. And then, you know, to even having any sort of participation. Now those people are not coming because of, all because of me. I have a really teeny spot, and I know that. I'm not the lead dog on this. And that's another thing. I think it's wonderful to be able to, even though you're in a position of maybe authority in certain respects, it's wonderful and it's healthy. It's healthy for us to serve one another. And you know what I'm saying? So when I'm involved.
Isn't that what Jesus did?
Yeah. I mean, it's healthy. I need that. And that, mm-hmm. that would be something. That's probably another podcast. That's one thing that I sometimes don't see. I think we have it good here in our team, because I think because we have a broad ministry, there's opportunities where, okay, you're lead dog on this, but you're not lead dog on this, and you're under someone else's authority. Whether mm-hmm. it's Dominican, American, Cuban, doesn't matter. You're serving somewhere else. And in a lot of places you go, and the missionary is the boss of everything. And they never, and nobody ever learns. And so how, if disciples are to make disciples, how does a person that's a Dominican learn to serve if they see the American always has the final word, and he's the boss of everything, and he can't be corrected. He doesn't show submission.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm teaching you something that I'm not doing myself because I'm married. And what I love about this ministry is that they're okay. Yeah. You're lead over here and I'm lead over here. But then there's places where I'm not the lead dog and I'm just a help. I'm just serving.
I have just learned in ministry, when you have to wear all those hats get really tiring.
Yeah.
I'd rather wear a couple hats that I wear and try to wear them well than try to be the, sometimes it's just nice to show up and have somebody hand you a paintbrush and just say, go paint that wall or, you know,
it's a great thing, but it's good for I think that's a discipleship thing too. It's good for our hearts.
Yeah.
It keeps us in check, because pride can run away where you kind of, I mean, you can get to a place where you kind of feel like you're all that and several bags of chips, you know, you're really important to the operation of what God's doing. And so I think as we can take roles, now, obviously, we have our main focuses. We can't do everything. So, you know, don't misunderstand. I mean, you can't have too many irons in the fire.
No.
But there's a place.
It's an attitude of the heart, whether I have to be in charge of everything, I have to make the final call. And you know what? I've seen this 100 times over. Generally, those missionaries miss some serious, or those pastors, but I would say in a missions mindset, miss some serious cultural cues. And do things that are counterculture that are actually more damaging, but they just assume because that's the way it's done in the States. And so many times it ends up being a gringo church in a different country, and they've totally missed the cultural cues. The other thing is, and it's unfortunate, but I've seen this too, where you just have an all-out narcissist, and they know that many times in cultures, especially in Latin cultures, you have this kind of a subservient attitude, and it's easy to rally people, you know, under you kind of thing. And it ends up being really a spiritually abusive situation because.
Well, but you know, this actually applies. I mean, here's another podcast, but that this doesn't apply just to missionaries. It applies to back home. To
the States. Yeah.
There are many there, and maybe people become some become narcissists because they are in the structure of a lot of our traditional Baptist churches. It's the senior pastor, and then he has deacons
who are supposed to be servants.
Supposed to sort of be like somewhat kind of equal in the structure and all that, but not really, because in a lot of the churches, it's where the pastor says goes. Okay. And you never see the pastor serving on any other ministry teams. He does everything. Right. He sets up, this is what we're going to do. And he does it. And I don't misunderstand. I believe the scripture does lay out very clearly, pastoral authority. I think that the it's not just everybody that comes in and everybody,
sure.
There is structure and authority in our lives.
I prefer to call it pastoral responsibility.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. I have no qualms with that. But there is this that's laid out in the scripture. I mean, what is it? Hebrews tells us to obey those that have ruled over us. I mean, responsibility, authority. I mean, Peter is told to, shepherd the flock of they have. So, you have this responsibility. It's very present there. But if you're only all the time giving, but you're never serving. You're never taking a position of, hey, where can I help out on this? And be able to held accountable. You start to become like absolute power type deal. You know what I mean? Like
The best book is Dangerous Calling by Tripp. It really is, because it shows the isolation pattern that happens. A church looks for this perfect pastor that's perfect and has his family together and his finances together and everything together. And then all of a sudden he's so caught up in ministry and has to, like you said, wear all the hats. He's got to be in charge of everything. He stops spending time with his family because he's working late hours. And then there's, the secretary or temptation goes on at the church. And the next thing you know, he's in trouble. But he can't say anything to anybody, because if he shows that he's fallen or he's falling, then he's not the perfect pastor that they're looking for anymore. So then you have him who self-isolates, and then they also get the mindset that's like, he gets the idea he's the only one that can ever hear from God. And so then he starts thinking that he's, the next thing to divine revelation. And then what happens? He falls. Somebody catches him. They throw him out because he's not useful anymore. He's the scarlet letter. Nobody likes to disciple him and minister to him and try to raise him up again. It's just, and I understand, I totally understand for a spiritual leader like that, there is responsibilities and that has to be dealt with. What I'm saying is it's like taking out the trash and then they repeat the pattern again. So this guy's absolutely destroyed. He should have had accountability all along for his benefit and for the church's benefit. Now, and I just said this in class last night, that's in that system. I love that you brought up us having elders, because the idea is they minister to you and the church. It's not just a one or the other. It's not a bunch of yes men, but it's somebody that holds you accountable. They hold the church accountable too. Well, guess what? If you're in a sticky situation where you're trying to make a decision that some people don't like, well, it can be Gary against so-and-so. But if you have a group of people who wade themselves through the problem and they're in agreement biblically, then it makes it look like you're not trying to be a dictator, that this is actually, you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, it's for your protection.
Or if you come out heavy-handed in something,
right?
And these guys go, hey, Pastor Gary, I don't know, that's a little bit much.
Right.
So I think they're super, super.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, man, we'll be here for a week and a half.
This is good. We just keep talking. We just need to have a little notebook here and be writing. Oh, yeah, that'd be a good
topic. We do. So this one is good. We got away with this one, but I really would just say, open your heart and your mind. Don't come to quick conclusions. If you're going to come, if you're thinking about being a missionary, really this applies back home, just like what we're saying, really evaluate situations. Be led by the Holy Spirit. Don't be quick to judge. And the biggest thing is in short periods of time, it's easy to form very erroneous opinions and then base your ministry or base what you do off of those opinions. And that can really hurt if you don't take the time. And I've learned that 100 times in ministry, that you take something on the surface that looks good or looks bad and you prejudge, and then you spend the next year or two really untangling yourself from all that because you totally misread the situation or didn't have an idea of something that was going on that you couldn't see.
It's a good bit of advice too for new missionaries that come and join a team. And they they feel like they see this. Now, so yeah, sometimes you have fresh perspective. No doubt about that. But you also have to realize there are things that have been learned through ups and downs and trials and all that. And so you step into an organization or you step into a system and you're like, well, why are they doing this? And I've seen this happen in the past where you know, somebody doesn't know the whole story. And so they're going to show how it should be done. And it's just like, well, and it's not to say that, because you don't want to have the attitude, well, we did that once, it didn't work, and so we can't do that again. But when you come in the new person, learn why. It's kind of like the old phrase, learn why the fences are up, or learn why the walls are up. I mean, learn why they're up before you start changing, you know, what's doing, because you're building off of the collective wisdom that's gone on before. That doesn't mean there can't be changes. There needs to be changes. And it doesn't mean that you don't get into a rut. Sometimes we do get into a rut, and you need somebody to kind of push you. But
well, I think there's a perfect example between you and I have a Venezuela background. You have a DR background. You've been here way longer than I was in Venezuela. So I have certain concepts and cultural concepts that I think apply to here, but maybe not. Even some opinions that we might come to. You and I don't agree 100% on everything, but you can look at me and say, well, I know Jason's personality, so I can understand how he comes to that conclusion, or, you know, I see how his family works and how they function. And so I may not agree with him, but I can, you know what I'm saying? You see the reason behind. And so you don't have to agree with me on everything. I'm not talking about absolutes. I'm just talking about opinions and the way we handle things, and even philosophical viewpoints of ministry. We might come to different conclusions, but we can respect each other because we understand each other. Yep. And I think that just takes time.
And you can have unity and diversity, and diversity is good.
Yeah, because it pushes you out of your comfort zone.
Uniformity is
dictatorship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uniformity will eventually lead everybody off the cliff.
Well, exactly.
And so, you know, in the diversity, you have protection.
Yep.
And so you can have unity and diversity. And so I think we have that, you know, here, certainly between me and you, but also throughout the team. And so, yeah.
Come visit us.
Yeah, come visit us. And
visit us for a week. Visit us for a week the first time. Learn about the dogs. Right. And then come back for our internship program and spend a couple months here with us.
And then, if the Lord's still leading.
Come on back down.
Yeah, come in and live.
I'll be like Bob Barker, come on down.
Okay.
The time's right to work with us here at EBIM.
Yeah.
All right, guys, thanks for being with us, and I hope this is encouragement to you. I hope this is a challenge to you, and we'll catch you on the next episode.